till that long-tongued lion, boom, till that midnight rider, till the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell them God's gonna cut 'em down, tell them God's gonna cut 'em down, tell them God's gonna cut 'em down.
Chapter 17. Between the Shadow and the Soul.
You may throw your rock and hide your hand, working in the dark as your fellow man. Sure the scar lay black and white, once down in the dark be brought to light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time.
The high security cells turned out to be in the underlevels of the temple, down in the space collectively known as the vaults. There were, at least according to rumor, actual high security vaults somewhere in the underlevels as well, used for storing dangerous force artifacts. But no one Ahsoka had ever talked to had actually been able to verify that. Ahsoka had never been down here before. And as she and Barriss descended the lower levels, down past planetary ground level, she half believed she could feel the weight of the temple pressing down on her. The temple, 5,000 years of history, and every Jedi that had ever walked through its halls. It felt, for lack of a better word, haunted. "I've never been down here before," Barriss murmured, echoing her thoughts. "Neither have I," Ahsoka whispered back. There wasn't really any need to whisper, but the underlevels seemed to deserve it. "I read that some of the passages down here date back before the sacking of Coruscant to the old Jedi Temple, which had been destroyed by the Sith millennia before either of them had been born, and the current temple built on its remains. Hundreds, maybe thousands, of Jedi had died that day. If the temple was haunted, Ahsoka bet she knew who at least a few of the ghosts were." Barriss shivered, looking around. "I believe it," she said. It was warmer down here than it was in the upper levels of the temple, just by a couple of degrees. The past climate control panels set into the walls on every level, all of them glowing steadily green. And locked doors with security scanners, or the round locks that meant they could only be opened by the Force. Now and then they passed other Jedi, all knights, and mostly temple guards. Each time she saw one, Ahsoka had to resist the urge to look for a hiding place, though no one asked them what they were doing down here. The underlevels, well, most of the underlevels anyway, weren't technically off-limits to Padawans, but Ahsoka didn't know any other Padawans who had ever been down here. To be fair, there wasn't actually much to see, especially considering that they couldn't get into any of the rooms. There might be powerful Force artifacts down here, but no one would be able to find them if they didn't already know where they were going. Barriss had what was supposed to be an accurate map of the accessible parts of the underlevels on her holoprojector. And as they paused at a corner, she brought it up. They peered down at the small hologram, studying the twisting passages, and Ahsoka said, "I think we go this way." "Really? I think this route looks more likely." Ahsoka frowned, mentally tracing it out. The high security cells weren't marked on the holomap, but she had found them in one of the files Master Plo was making her read. They were probably still in the same place as they had been a millennium earlier. "I'm pretty sure it's this way," she said, with more confidence than she felt. Barriss considered the map again, then nodded. "All right." She turned the holoprojector off and tucked it into one of her belt pouches. They continued on down through the underlevels, getting deeper and deeper into the vaults. If the council had put Kenobi down here to keep him away from the general population of the temple, Ahsoka thought, they had done a really good job. Under normal circumstances, she would have given up and turned around a long time ago. She was starting to think that they had taken a wrong turn somewhere and needed to go back and retrace their steps, or maybe go back to the archives and find a more accurate map. Or just give up. After all, Obi-Wan Kenobi was a dangerous criminal, whether or not he was also a dark Jedi. Maybe trying to talk to him alone wasn't such a great idea. "Do you feel that?" Barriss whispered. "Feel what?" Ahsoka asked, reaching out with her senses. She thought that she would probably be able to recognize Kenobi's Force signature, but she couldn't feel him, just... It's a keep-away. There were a multitude of things that could be done with the Force by a really dedicated Jedi, though it usually took someone of consular strength and training to pull off the more ultra ones for more than a few minutes. Ahsoka could manage to hold a keep-away on one person for about 30 seconds, but this felt a lot more complicated than a simple Force suggestion to look the other way. It felt almost sunk into the walls somehow, as if the corridors themselves had been imbued with the Force. Ahsoka didn't know how strong he had to be in the Force to do something like that. "We must be in the right place," she said to Barriss, who nodded. Now that she knew the keep-away was there, it was easier to resist it. Ahsoka could still feel it, a gentle, soothing suggestion that maybe she ought to be doing something else, going in a different direction, or just turning around entirely. But she pushed through it, intent on her goal. They took several more turns, wandering around a curving corridor that seemed to have no doors for a few minutes, then found themselves on what Ahsoka thought was the next level down. They must have been very far beneath the temple's ground level now. "There," Barriss said, pointing carefully around a corner at the two temple guards stationed outside a heavy-looking door with a security scanner beside it. "That must be it. I can't think what else down here would require a guard." Ahsoka peered at the guards doubtfully. If the security scanner was anything like the one on board Paladin, then there was a good chance it wouldn't be set to let her through, but she had to try. "All right," she said. "Here goes nothing." Taking a deep breath, she straightened the front of her tunic and walked out into the corridor as if she belonged there, keeping her head up and her shoulders back. Barriss followed her. She couldn't read the guards' expressions with their masks in place, but she saw them turn their heads to track her approach. "Hello," she said. "I'm Master Plo Koon's Padawan. He sent us with a message for the prisoner."
Hopefully they wouldn't actually check with Master Plo.
"The prisoner is not allowed visitors," one of the guards said. She had a very faint accent that made Ahsoka think she might be a Zabrak, though it was hard to tell, and planetary accents didn't always mean anything anyway. "I know," Ahsoka said. "We're not visitors. We're here on High Council business." She crossed her fingers behind her back, hoping that would be enough to get them through the door. At least that meant they were in the right place. The other guard said, "Unauthorized personnel are not permitted entry. Run along, young Padawans. Exercise your curiosity somewhere else." Ahsoka felt the blood rise in her cheeks, remembering Obi-Wan Kenobi's courteous apology for talking down to her. "We're here on Master Koon's request," she said stubbornly. "We're not curiosity seekers. We have a message for the prisoner." "I'm Barriss Offee," Barriss said suddenly. "Luminara Unduli is my master. Obi-Wan Kenobi is the only person who knows where she is, and I have to talk to him. Please let us in." Ahsoka shut her eyes in frustration. She could feel a faint thread of sympathy from one of the guards, but neither of them seemed inclined to comply. As I said, young Padawan, the prisoner is not allowed visitors, said the probably Azabrak guard. Please let us in, Barris said. I just want to talk to him. Find out if my master is alive or if it's all a lie. I am sorry, young Padawan, but...
What's going on here?
Ahsoka turned to see Quinlan Vos striding down the corridor towards them and felt her heart leap. Master Vos was a Kefar, a big bronze-skinned near-human with his birth clan's markings tattooed across his face. And one of the only people in the Order that she knew for certain was allowed access to Obi-Wan Kenobi.
These Padawans were just leaving, Master Vos, said one of the guards.
Master Quinlan raised an eyebrow at them.
Were you?
Barris looked frozen, so Ahsoka said quickly, We've got a message for Captain Kenobi from Master Plo, but they won't let us in.
Do you? Master Quinlan said, looking faintly amused.
He considered them both for a moment, then told the guards, I'll escort Padawan Tano and Padawan Offian. They won't be alone with Kenobi.
They're not authorized to be in there.
You heard her, Quinlan said. She's a High Counselor's Padawan. That gives her temporary authorization with an escort. I'll take him in.
The guards looked at each other. Then the Zabrak said, Very well. They stood aside, and Quinlan strode forward to lay his hand on the security scanner. The door slid open in front of him, and he motioned Ahsoka and Barris inside, then followed them in. Ahsoka staggered back a pace as the atmosphere of the place hit her. The force tangled around her, at once too much and not enough, and she actually turned to flee before she caught herself.
Die. She felt it murmur. Cease to be. You are nothing. You are no one. You are no one in a nowhere place, and you will always be.
Steady, Quinlan said, catching her shoulder in one hand, and Barris's in the other. It's a shock at first. Give it a minute. Remember that you are Jedi.
Ahsoka let out a shuddering breath, concentrating on that. Jedi. I am a Jedi. I am not and never have been nothing. This is the Jedi Temple, and I belong here. I always will.
What? Barris gasped. What is that?
It's a high-security prison meant to contain Force users, Quinlan said. It's got a few extra tricks built in.
Now, he added, what are you doing here? Because Plo didn't send you.
Maybe we should have gone to him first, Ahsoka thought guiltily, as Barris said.
I want to talk to Obi-Wan Kenobi about my master. It's not Ahsoka's fault. It was my idea, and I asked her to help me.
They haven't told you about Luminara yet? Quinlan said, sounding startled.
What am I saying? Of course they haven't. The Council's making a hobby out of not telling people things this week.
Will you help us? Ahsoka asked, hopefully.
Well, you're already in here, he said. It seems like kind of a waste to get this far and then turn around. Plus, I already broke about 3 different protocols by letting you in anyway. Might as well go full hog.
Thank you. You're not getting a private conversation, though, he warned. And you get to explain this to Plo, since the guards are probably already contacting him as we speak.
We understand, Ahsoka said quickly, and Barris nodded.
I just want to know what really happened to my master, she said. I don't know if he'll tell me the truth, but I have to know.
Oh, he'll tell the truth, Quinlan said. You might not like it, but he'll tell the truth.
That didn't sound promising, Ahsoka thought. She and Barris followed Quinlan down the dark corridor, which was lined on both sides by empty cells. Motion-activated lights came on as they walked, and the oppressive atmosphere of the place got even worse the further in they went. Ahsoka couldn't help rubbing her bare arms with her hands, trying to get warm. The only occupied cell was down at the end. Ahsoka could feel the fresh wards lay on it, force techniques used to keep intruders out and the occupant inside. They made the inside of her head itch, made her want to turn and run away.
Even Master Quinlan shuddered a little as he passed his hand over the security scanner. The door slid open, revealing a humming red ray shield on the other side of a space large enough to stand in. Obi-Wan Kenobi was doing push-ups in the cell beyond, but he sat up when he saw them, raising his eyebrows as he reached for his shirt. "Quinn," he said, "and you brought company." Pulling his shirt on, he stood up, nodding politely at Ahsoka. "Padawan Tano, and..." "My name is Barriss Offee," Barriss said, managing to sound both defiant and nervous at the same time. "I'm your Luminara's Padawan, of course." The cell door slid shut behind them, the ward settling into place. Ahsoka actually gasped, feeling the force cut off from her as if with a blade. Both Quinlan and Kenobi winced. Barriss swayed for a moment, catching herself with one hand on Ahsoka's shoulder. "Force-nulling wards," Kenobi explained, "in case I get restless and decide to go for a walk." He shrugged self-deprecatingly, sweeping a hand towards the ray shield in front of him. "What can I do for you, Padawan Offee?" For a moment, Barriss looked hesitant. Then she squared her shoulders and stepped forward. "I want to know if my master is still alive." Kenobi flicked a glance at Quinlan, who shrugged, then said, "Luminara has a shattered kneecap, but she was alive when I left Naboo. She's being given medical attention as required by the laws of war." Barriss blanched slightly at the mention of Master Luminara's injury. "You didn't murder her?" "I don't kill Jedi," Kenobi said flatly, crossing his arms over his chest. "Luminara attacked us and injured Queen Amidala. I would have been well within my rights to kill her, either in combat or by execution. I didn't. She's as well as anyone can be with a head injury and a shattered kneecap. She and Master Koth are probably being treated better than I am right now." Barriss bit her lip. "Do you swear?" she began, and Master Quinlan cut her off with a gesture. "Don't bother, Obi-Wan," he said. "You know no Jedi will believe any oath you make since you broke your vows. There's nothing you can swear by that will believe." Kenobi flashed him an irritated look. "As though the Jedi have any honor," he said. "We don't need honor, we have the Force," Quinlan said, with the air of a very, very old argument. Kenobi rolled his eyes and turned back to Barriss, who was starting to look upset. "By the Force," he said gently, "I swear that Luminara Unduli was alive when I left Naboo." After a moment's hesitation, Barriss nodded. "Thank you for telling me, Captain Kenobi," she said. "I lost my master," Kenobi said, still with that kind undertone to his voice. "No Padawan should have to live through that if they don't have to. The High Council should know that." His gaze flicked to Quinlan, who said, "More than one thing the High Council should know." Barriss shifted, glancing aside. Ahsoka looked down at her feet. "Is there anything else you want to know?" Kenobi asked Barriss. Ahsoka said, "Do the High Council really send Master Koth and Master Unduli to kill Queen Amidala?" All three of the others stared at her. Kenobi's gaze sharp, Quinlan's suddenly still, and Barriss's surprised. Kenobi said, "They attacked us at night, while my wife and I were sleeping in our bedroom. I don't know if they meant to kill us or kidnap us. Luminara and Eeth wouldn't tell us what their intentions were. You can watch the Hollow and decide for yourself."
"What Hollow?" Quinlan said.
"The Hollow the droid cam Eeth and Luminara brought with them transmitted back to the Republic before I destroyed it," Kenobi said. "We intercepted the transmission. I know it exists. And I know the Council has a copy of it because Windu mentioned it to me."
At Quinlan's expression, he added dryly,
"Let me guess. The High Council didn't tell you about that, either. Since it's relevant to your defense, we'll ask for it,
Quinlan said, his mouth tightening.
You should have mentioned that before.
I assumed you knew, Kenobi said.
My mistake.
Yeah, maybe stop assuming that we know anything, Quinlan said, grimacing. I understand the urge when it comes to Thulm, believe me, but the Council's been making a hobby out of keeping secrets recently.
Kenobi's mouth twisted.
You don't say.
But why would the Council lie? Barriss asked, sounding uncomfortable.
You'd have to ask them, Padawan, Kenobi said. They certainly aren't interested in telling me anything.
Surprise, surprise, Quinlan said. Obi-Wan, the Padawan shouldn't linger, so I'm going to take them back, but Thulm and Thra are coming by later to talk about what happened on the wheel. I wanted to talk to you first, but...
He glanced at Ahsoka and Barriss.
You can talk in front of us, Master Quinlan, Ahsoka said brightly. We won't tell anyone.
Nice try, Ahsoka,
he said dryly.
But no dice. You two shouldn't even be down here. Plo's gonna have my head as it is.
For absolutely no reason that made any sense, Ahsoka looked at Kenobi, who shrugged again.
I don't mind the company, he said.
Yeah, no, Quinlan said. I'm not letting the kids stick around beneath force-nulling wards longer than I have to.
Hey, Ahsoka protested.
Kenobi smiled at her, though there was an edge to it.
Ahsoka knew from her studies that being cut off from the Force drove most Force users insane, usually sooner rather than later. The several days he had already spent behind the wards were probably beginning to have an effect.
Believe me, Padawan Tano, he said. You don't want to linger here if you have anywhere better to be.
Are you all right? Barriss asked, awkwardly.
Not particularly, Kenobi said, after a moment of hesitation, his gaze flickering towards Quinlan again.
But there's nothing that can be done about that until this farce of a trial is over. Thank you for asking, Padawan Offee.
Master Quinlan rested a hand on Barriss's shoulder, turning her around.
I'll see you later, Obi-Wan, he said. Come on, Ahsoka.
She reached for the control to open the outer door.
Quinn,
Kenobi said from behind them as the door slid open, the Force fluttering weakly back into Ahsoka.
Have you heard anything from her?
Her was probably Queen Amidala, Ahsoka thought. She stepped out into the corridor, turning back to see Kenobi standing in front of the glowing red ray shield. A small, forlorn figure.
Quinlan shook his head.
I'm sorry, Obi-Wan. We wouldn't have, though. The holonet relays are down. Naboo doesn't have access to the emergency relays, so she'd have to send someone in the flesh. And you're still officially not here.
Kenobi nodded, looking resigned. The ray shield accentuated the dark bruises on his face. He had been healing on the cruiser, but it looked like the force-snulling wards had reversed the process.
The relays are down.
Some kind of bug in the system,
Quinlan said.
Thulm and Thra later, Kenobi.
Yes, I'll try and clear a spot in my busy schedule,
Kenobi said dryly. He nodded to Barriss and Ahsoka.
It was a pleasure to see you again, Padawan Tano. And I'm very pleased to finally meet you, Padawan Offee.
You too, Ahsoka said. Barriss just nodded back, still looking faintly uncertain. The door slid shut as Master Quinlan stepped out into the corridor. They made their way out of the high security cells without speaking, Ahsoka trying to hide her relief as the door to the rest of the underlevels opened for them. For a frantic instant, she had thought that they would be stuck there forever, almost completely cut off from the Force and with the wards whispering insanity to them. Her relief didn't last long.
Master Plo was standing in the corridor outside, watching and being watched by the temple guards. When they emerged, he said gravely,
"Ahsoka,
Barriss, what have you been doing?" Ahsoka winced.
"I take full responsibility,"
Quinlan said quickly, then made a faint gesture with one hand where the guards couldn't see it.
"I see,"
Master Plo said.
"Perhaps we should discuss this elsewhere."
"Yes, Master Plo," Ahsoka said sheepishly. "It was my fault," Barriss began.
"Elsewhere, young Barriss,"
he said pointedly, as they started up the corridor in the direction of the main levels. "Are you worried about the guards?" Ahsoka asked, once they were out of earshot. "I thought they weren't supposed to take sides with any of the factions in the Order."
"There is a great difference," Master Plo said, "between ideals and reality. I find that it is safer to err on the side of caution, especially when a very fine Jedi's life may be at stake. Now, did you learn anything of interest?"
"Palpatine's gone."
"What?"
Obi-Wan looked up from the plates he was uncovering, his eyes widening. Padme took her handmaiden's cloak off, relieved to have the weight even of that light fabric off her head and shoulders, and tossed it over the back of the nearest couch before sitting down to pull off her shoes. It wasn't raining at the moment, but it was a hot, humid day, and Padme felt sticky and overheated, the fabric of her half-robes clinging to her skin. She was wearing a wrap tunic that left her midriff bare, which helped a little with the heat, and a long skirt gathered at her hips, which didn't. She'd forgotten quite how humid Naboo summers could get, since she had been stuck in Coruscant during the last few years.
"Palpatine is gone," she said carefully, not looking up when she heard Anakin come into the sitting room. "Sabe said that the Queen sent him on a tour of the bomb sites on Rory and Almadun. She also implied that the Queen would not be unhappy if he never came back, or if some unexploded ordnance happened to blow up while he was there. But I think that Sabe just doesn't like him."
"When did he leave?" Obi-Wan asked, finally setting down the cloche he was holding.
"Hot weather food," Padme saw. "Cold buckwheat noodles with the toppings and dipping sauces separate, along with a fresh pot of green tea with steam purling up from the spout."
"Very early this morning, apparently," Padme said, tossing her shoes aside with a sigh of relief and wriggling her toes gratefully. "I think he might have said one thing too many to the Queen yesterday, and that's why she sent him away. Or at least, that was the subtext. I don't think that she'd sent him away because of me. Rabbi didn't tell her about what she thought happened." She hastily elided Rabbi's assumption, since Anakin probably wouldn't take that well.
"After he tried to strip you," Obi-Wan observed, removing another cloche to reveal a plate of artfully arranged sliced fruit. "That must be why he tried to do it then, instead of a more convenient occasion. He didn't know how long he'd be gone, and the moon's probably too far away even for him to reach."
"I hope so," Anakin said grumpily, finally coming over to investigate the food. "I don't want to think about how strong in the Force someone has to be to reach that far."
"Could you do it?"
He and Obi-Wan looked at each other, considering, then shook their heads in unison.
"We're not trained to do that," Anakin said. "And most Jedi aren't that powerful anyway. Especially to do something active like that, and without any real tie, or to someone who isn't Force-sensitive."
He shook his head again.
"I couldn't do it, even if I was full strength, which I'm not. Or if I wanted to, which I don't."
"I couldn't do it either," Obi-Wan said. "I'm not sure I know of anyone who is. At least, not in living memory. Yoda, maybe."
"Good," Padme said. And off their surprised looks, added,
"I don't like the idea of someone with that much power existing in the galaxy."
Obi-Wan and Anakin glanced at each other. Then Obi-Wan said, "Some of the Jedi and Sith of the Old Republic were probably capable of it, but not in the present day, and not in living memory, no. We've lost so much of our history," he added, a little sadly. Padme shuddered, not bothering to hide her reaction. Obi-Wan glanced down, a flush rising in his cheeks, but Anakin met her gaze defiantly. "Any idea when Palpatine will be back?" he asked. "Murder clearly on his mind. I think we'd like to have a word with him." Padme frowned at him. "I think I'd prefer that you not kill him before we can find out if he has another dead man's switch, thank you. I'd like to avoid destroying two galaxies." Anakin bared his teeth delicately, though there was a flash of shame in his eyes. "Plenty of ways we can hurt him without killing him," he said. Obi-Wan gave him a sharp look, but didn't say anything. Padme poured the teapot towards her and began pouring for all three of them. "Obi-Wan, you're on the Jedi Council. Do you know anything about a Republic military plan that would involve taking the Holonet down?"
"That's insane," Anakin said blankly. "It's impossible to take the Holonet down. The relays have about a dozen redundancies built in. Even a virus couldn't do it. You'd probably have to blow at least a third of the relays away individually before you even slowed the net, and half before there was any noticeable effect." He trailed off at the expression on Obi-Wan's face.
"Seriously? We had a plan for that?"
"A set of contingency plans under the subheading Operation Rainmaker," Obi-Wan said, after a moment's hesitation. "They were never put into effect because they were deemed too controversial, and at the time we didn't have any operations underway that required a disinformation campaign of that extent. Why do you ask, Padme?"
"Because as far as Glasswater..." "Oh, that's the Naboo Intelligence Services," she clarified at his blank expression. "Can tell... The Holonet is down from the core worlds to the mid-rim. Queen Amidala is very unhappy about it."
"I can imagine," Obi-Wan said.
He sat back against the couch, stroking his beard, and added,
"I don't know much about it, because the original plans preceded my appointment to the Council, and intelligence isn't my specialty anyway, but I know that several contingency plans included a nested series of worms that would temporarily disable the relays in certain key systems, and another involved selectively placed and remotely triggered explosives that would slag certain relays. I'm afraid I don't know which relays they were off the top of my head."
"I never heard about any of this," Padme said, staring at him. She wasn't particularly surprised to hear that High Command had that kind of plan in its lineup. But she felt a little hurt, because taking the Holonet down would have much larger repercussions than merely halting, or at least slowing, communications through the galaxy. The Republic's economy might not have survived it, for one.
"It was very neat to know," Obi-Wan said apologetically. "And they were never put into operation."
"Yes, they were," Anakin said suddenly. When they both looked at him, he flushed and clarified. "Not in our universe, but the other one. Vader's universe, I just remembered. Right after the Holonews announced that General Grievous had been killed. By you, by the way," he added to Obi-Wan. "The entire Holonet went down and stayed down for about a day, so they couldn't report on Order 66 and Operation Nightfall. That's the attack on the temple. When the Holonet came back up, every reporter sympathetic to the Jedi was gone, and they were repeating Imperial propaganda. Or, at least that's what I was told, anyway. It was about 20 years before I got there."
He glanced down, not meeting either of their gazes.
"Lando and Chewbacca told me about it."
Obi-Wan said, his expression neutral. "That's interesting. Though not immediately relevant, I think. I hope."
We'd know if Dooku was murdering all the Jedi, right?
Anakin said.
From his tone, he didn't consider it a rhetorical question.
We'd know, Obi-Wan said, looking as if the same thought had occurred to him.
Padme glanced down at the three full cups of tea in front of her, then pushed one each towards Anakin and Obi-Wan.
Would you be willing to tell the Queen what you just told me? She asked.
Obi-Wan was silent for a moment, considering the question.
Yes, he said finally. I don't know any details, though, so I'm not sure I'd be any real help. But I don't think it would do any harm, either, since if it was deliberately done by the Republic, then they're trying to cover something up that might be accidentally revealed by the Holonet.
Do you know if the core relays are still active?
The what?
Padme didn't know much about the Holonet relay system, except that it was completely neutral and completely necessary for the galaxy to continue functioning, even in the midst of wartime.
Even if, 70%? 80%?
Anakin looked at Obi-Wan for confirmation. Go down. Then you can still send flash messages. Hard code, nothing live. You can't have much of a conversation, but you can compress a holo and send it on. It'll bounce off the available relays and take a while to get wherever it's going, but it'll still work. Eventually. You just need to have a certain number of relays still active in certain sectors of the galaxy. Those are the core relays.
I've no idea, Padme said. It didn't come up. The Holonet's still active from the midrim outwards, though.
Anakin and Obi-Wan looked at each other again, then shrugged in near unison.
It's theoretically possible, Anakin said. I guess. If you could knock out enough of the right relays.
But it's still pretty crazy. Are you sure it's not just some kind of bug?
I'm not sure about anything, Padme said dryly.
You can discuss it with the experts at Glasswater House tomorrow, if the Queen agrees.
Anakin made a face, leaning forward to start piling noodles on his plate.
I hope so. I was supposed to go back to base today and take a look at the new N2s, but no one would let me out of the suite, and climbing out the balcony seemed rude.
That's probably because Anakin Skywalker got arrested and taken to the base, Padme said, and then had to explain the day's series of events as Anakin's eyebrows climbed towards his forehead.
That kid isn't good enough for her,
he said decisively once she had finished.
Padme bit the inside of her cheek to keep from saying anything in response to that. She didn't look like she was actually going to go for it, did she? Anakin said. Because seriously!
I think Her Highness is too concerned with whether or not she's been widowed to have a fling with a smuggler, Annie, Padme said gently. And that kid is exactly the same age as you.
Anakin grimaced, dropping his gaze.
She can't have been widowed, he said, more to Obi-Wan than to Padme. The Jedi don't execute prisoners. Especially not... We don't kill our own. Not ever. And you never stop being a Jedi, even if you leave the Order. Not really.
Padme looked at Obi-Wan for his response.
He blinked when he realized she was waiting for him to answer, then said quietly,
That's all true. Jedi can leave the Order. They can turn to the dark side. But they never really stop being Jedi. And we don't kill our own.
He blinked again, as though only just registering the words, then straightened slightly, something about him lightening as though a weight had been lifted from his shoulders. Anakin glanced at him and smiled slightly, easy and unconcerned.
Padme didn't know what she had missed, but it clearly had something to do with Obi-Wan's perception of the Jedi, and it was probably one of those things that no one except a Jedi would understand.
She swirled noodles around her chopsticks and ate them, the sliced nuts and herbs on top crunching between her teeth.
It had been a long day, even without counting the morning's confrontation. And Padme was exhausted, if weirdly satisfied. She liked being useful, and she hadn't realized how useless she had been feeling in the Senate, where nothing got done unless it happened to be one of the Supreme Chancellor's pet projects. In another life, she might have been very happy as one of the Queen of Naboo's handmaidens. They finished eating, Padme updating the two Jedi on everything else that had happened that day. It largely consisted of frequent updates from Fleet Command and Glasswater House, and the Queen fielding calls from the rest of the Confederacy. And then Anakin got up to clear the table, stacking the empty plates on a tray by the door, keying the comm button that would bring someone from the staff to take them away. Padme held her teacup between her hands, curling her feet up to one side on the couch. Obi-Wan, there's something else the Queen told me. He glanced up, his forearms resting on his knees. What is it? Palpatine, as Darth Sidious, tried to recruit Captain Kenobi 12 years ago.
What?
Anakin came back over and sat down next to Obi-Wan. Padme repeated what Amidala had told her that morning, studying Obi-Wan's reactions. There wasn't much to say, since Amidala had been too distracted to give her any of the details, but she could read Obi-Wan's clear relief when he heard that Kenobi had gone to the Jedi with the information. At least 12 years ago, Kenobi had been less of a rogue than they had believed. Padme found the thought strangely reassuring. She finished her tea and went into the refresher attached to her bedroom to shower, listening to Obi-Wan and Anakin talk quietly about the Jedi in the sitting room before she shut the door behind her. She stripped out of her half-robes and left them in a pile of blue fabric on the floor, looking into the full-length mirror as she let the water run. There was a mark at the base of her throat, another on her collarbone, a third at the top of her left breast that was unmistakably a bite mark. Obi-Wan liked using his teeth, which she hadn't expected, and which she had liked more than she would have guessed if she had ever considered it. Anakin didn't have a tendency to leave marks during their lovemaking. Obi-Wan had apologized. Padme had told him not to bother and to do it again. Padme touched her fingers to the purple mark on her breast, shutting her eyes at the memory of Obi-Wan's hands on her body, the warm weight of him, his mouth on her skin. Their first time had been rough and fast, bruising on the floor of the bath chamber, but after that, oh. She shivered, remembering, and reached up to remove her headpiece and finger comb her hair loose of its pins before stepping into the shower. The water sluiced the sweat from her skin as Padme tipped her head back, feeling some of the day's strain wash away. She let the water run until she felt clean again. Ancestors, but it had been a hot, sticky day. Anakin was waiting in her bedroom when she left the refresher. Padme stilled, remembering how that had turned out the last time. But he said quickly, "Sorry, I didn't want to... Sorry." "It's all right," Padme said, reaching up to pull the collar of her dressing gown shut. She didn't know how Anakin would react to the hickeys, even if he'd taken the initial news more or less in stride. By some standards. "Are you all right, honey?" His mouth twisted. "I don't know," he admitted. "Not really, I guess." Under normal circumstances, Padme would have reached for him. But right now, she didn't know whether or not that would be welcome. So she hung back and waited. Anakin ran a hand over the back of his neck, not meeting her eyes. "So I talked to Obi-Wan today." Since neither of them had been noticeably the worse for wear when Padme had come back, she assumed that hadn't ended in a physical fight. "And?" "And it's possible I might have overreacted a little."
Anakin admitted, wincing. He glanced at her for permission, then sat down on the side of the bed. Padme sat down beside him, close enough that he could reach out if he wanted, but not so close that he would feel threatened. Padme held her tongue on just a little, and said instead, "Anakin, I know that what you saw in the other universe must have been terrible, but..." He held up a hand, and she stopped, waiting for him to go on. "It's not that," he said. "Well, it's not just that. The other universe, it was terrible, you're right, but it wasn't... Life went on, you know? Yeah, the Republic had fallen and the Jedi were all gone. That was all ancient history. It didn't matter anymore. And in some ways, that was a relief. It's not like I want the Republic gone or the Jedi stars, no, but it was simple. I was a Jedi. I was the last Jedi left in the galaxy, except for Obi-Wan, who was a ghost and half mad, and Yoda, who was insane and in exile anyway, and this half-trained kid who was part of the Rebel Alliance. Sometimes being a Jedi is very simple, you know? Sometimes all you have to do is hunt and kill. And I thought, that's what it was. I was a Jedi, there was a Sith, and all I had to do was kill him. There wasn't anything else. No complications. He glanced at her, and for an instant she saw the terrible grief in his eyes. "You were dead," he said, his voice catching. "Obi-Wan, the other Obi-Wan, the ghost Obi-Wan, told me. He said you were murdered over 20 years earlier when the Republic fell and the Jedi died. He told me you were dead, and it almost destroyed me, hearing about it. Knowing that I hadn't been able to save you, because he told me I was dead, too. That I had been murdered with the rest of the Jedi. He told me he saw what Darth Vader had left behind of my body." Padme caught her breath. "He didn't tell you?" Anakin shook his head. "No, he didn't tell me. He didn't tell me. Yoda didn't tell me. No one told me. I found out from a security hologram in the temple when we broke in to get the Ouroboros." He swallowed, his hands clenched into fists. "I had to look at a hologram of myself. Of myself. Not Vader, not in the armor. Murdering Jedi. Killing younglings. And he didn't hesitate. It was like there was nothing left inside him. Except there was. He was me. I've seen enough photos of myself to know what I look like when I'm fighting. It was me doing all that. Murdering people. Going on my knees to a blasted Sith Lord. Calling him Master." He shook his head, burying his hands in his hair. "I used to swear I'd never kneel to anyone again, and I had to watch myself." "Honey, it wasn't you," Padme said. He swallowed. "I know, but it was, too. I can't just say that it wasn't me, because he was Anakin Skywalker. I saw enough through the Force, through Obi-Wan's memories, hell, even when I met him on Mustafar, to know that he wasn't insane. I wish he was insane. I think he wished he was insane. I would have wished it," he added quietly, looking down at his hands. "But he wasn't. He knew what he was doing. He knew exactly what he was doing. Even when he was murdering children. And he did it anyway. I saw him kill you. Or Obi-Wan did. The other Obi-Wan. He couldn't get there in time to stop it." Padme's hands tightened on the fabric of her dressing gown.
I would never hurt you,
Anakin told her.
Never. I'd die first.
A point which Obi-Wan made pretty damn clear earlier. He touched his own throat.
You know the armor?
Padme had to wet her lips before she could say,
I saw Darth Vader on Mustafar.
Obi-Wan put him in that armor,
Anakin said, making her gasp.
He wounded him in their duel, cut off his legs and one arm, left him to burn to death.
Obi-Wan would never...
Padme began automatically.
He would. He did.
But it wasn't cruelty, Anakin said.
I mean, it was, but it wasn't... It wasn't just that he wanted me... wanted Vader to suffer, even though he did. It was because if he went down there to put him out of his misery, he would have died beside him. Obi-Wan loved me. Loved his Anakin Skywalker. Too much to kill him, even when he thought he was already dying. Even when it meant that I died in agony. And having to do that drove him insane. Or pretty close to it anyway, even though it's always kind of hard to tell with Obi-Wan.
Padme could see that.
The idea that I could do that to him? To you?
Anakin shook his head.
I'd rather die. And the thing is, I don't know why he did it. I thought I did, but it doesn't make any sense. I'm a Jedi Knight. I might not be a particularly good Jedi, but I'm still a Jedi, and I should be able to live and die for the Order without a second thought. It's not like you can just flip a switch in a knight's brain and go from Jedi to Sith. It doesn't work like that. Except that, as far as Obi-Wan knew, that's what happened. And the not knowing drove him mad. And I keep thinking, I keep trying to figure out why. Why would he do that? Why would I do that? And I understand why Obi-Wan went mad. Why he didn't trust me enough to tell me the truth. Why he lied to me for months. Even when he sent me away when we were fighting Palpatine. He loved me, but he couldn't trust me. He couldn't trust anyone. Not again. Not after what happened to him, and not after what he had to do, but he especially couldn't trust me.
Is that what you're afraid of? Padme asked, when he lapsed silent, looking down at his hands. That you'll fall to the dark side? Anakin looked up at her.
Yes, he said. Because I don't know why he did it. He said, but I wouldn't do that. I couldn't do that. But I could. Because he did. That universe, it's not like this one, where it's been different for a long time. I mean, you and Queen Amidala, or Obi-Wan and Captain Kenobi, that's different. The only difference between that Anakin and me was that he wasn't stupid enough to pick up stray Sith artifacts on Odrin. So he and Obi-Wan got to pack up and go home, instead of whatever happened here. That's it. That's the only difference. And maybe something happened to him between then and the end of the war, something that made him vulnerable. But if it did, Obi-Wan didn't know about it, because it blindsided him. And Darth Vader was a monster. You know that I've done things, he swallowed. But there were reasons for that. Vader just killed. He was Palpatine's weapon. He let himself be used. Look, I'm a knight. I know I'm being used, but at least I know I'm fighting for something worth having. I'm not a murderer. I'm not like him. Except I am, because there are people that I'd commit murder for.
He pushed a hand back through his hair.
A better Jedi, a good Jedi, wouldn't do that. Not for anything, not for anyone. And I keep thinking, if I was better, if I was good, then maybe I wouldn't... I could stop being afraid of what's inside me. What I could do. I'd really like to stop being afraid, except maybe that's what happened to him. Maybe he stopped being afraid, and when he stopped, that's when Vader happened. But I don't know, and it's... I know why the other Obi-Wan went mad. Why he couldn't trust me. Force save us, he wanted to. He wanted to so badly that I can still feel it, but he couldn't do it. And I can't even blame him for that. Ani, Padme said, after he went silent. It wasn't you who did all those things. He swallowed. Yeah, I know. I don't even remember. A lot of what I saw in the temple wasn't... It wasn't what he saw. I wasn't in his skin. I was for some of it, but for most of it I wasn't. I can't explain, he added quickly. It's the Force. It shows us things sometimes. I wasn't seeing through his eyes. Maybe if I was, I'd understand, but... Yeah. I can remember what it felt like to hold a lightsaber and kill, but I knew that anyway. But I know what it feels like to die. To be murdered and to be betrayed because... He shook his head. I just wish I knew why he did it, so that I could make sure not to do that. Obi-Wan said, Padme told him, carefully keeping her own hands in her lap, that it probably wasn't just one reason. It was probably a lot of little ones, and then one inciting incident that made him snap. Anakin's gaze flickered towards her, and he almost smiled.
You talked about me?
He asked. About Vader, Padme said, careful to make the distinction. Not you.
Did he tell you...
He told me that Vader blamed his fall on me, Padme said, and saw Anakin wince.
Not on you, he began.
Ani, I don't care what excuses Darth Vader used, she said. You aren't him. I'm not her. Obi-Wan isn't the Obi-Wan who went mad, and we don't live in their world. You can't live by their standards. You can't do that to yourself. To us. It's cruel. No one can live like that. Anakin looked down, folding his hands into his hair. He was quiet for a few moments, while Padme twisted her hands together to keep from reaching out for him. And then he said,
I know. I thought I could, but I'm never going to be that kind of Jedi. I wish I was, Force save me. I wish I was. I'm never going to be that kind of Jedi. I couldn't even wait 5 minutes to think about what killing Palpatine might mean, and I should have known!
Padme bit her lip, then made herself say, You did what you thought was right. There was no way you could have known that he had a dead man's switch.
But I should have! Anakin said. I know him! I should have guessed!
If you'd known him that well, you would have known what he was a long time ago. Padme pointed out. None of us really knew him, Annie. Anakin shook his head, but she didn't think it was denial of her words.
People are dead because of me, he said.
Not because of Vader, because of me. Because of Palpatine, Annie, Padme insisted. And yes, I wish you hadn't done it, she added quickly. And I'm angry that you did. But under the circumstances... Ani, I might have done the same thing.
But you didn't.
You didn't tell me, Padme said. She held up a hand to forestall his protest. I understand why you and Obi-Wan made that decision. I wish you had told me, but I understand that there are things that the Jedi don't feel comfortable telling people outside the Order, even a galactic senator, and it must have felt that way at the time. Anakin looked down. I'm sorry, he said. I couldn't tell you then. I didn't even want to tell Obi-Wan, but he was there. He saw Vader. I had to tell him. Obi-Wan's a Jedi. I couldn't keep something like that from him. Not if...
He swallowed.
Obi-Wan's the only person I know who could stop me, if it came to that.
Padme reached for his hands, taking them between both of hers. She felt a moment where Anakin resisted her. Then he gave in, his shoulders slumping. "Do you think Obi-Wan could do that?" she said.
"I know he could," Anakin said. "I don't know if he would, not anymore, and that scares me almost as much as Vader does."
"Do you think it matters?" Padme asked him. "You shouldn't have to choose your friends based on whether or not they'll be able to kill you."
Anakin stared at the joined hands. "Could you do it?"
Given that Padme had had a blaster pointed at him after she'd thought he'd murdered the Supreme Chancellor of the Republic, she actually had an answer for that.
"Yes."
His head jerked up.
"What?"
"I could put a blaster bolt in your head if I needed to," Padme said. "That's what you wanted to hear, isn't it?"
Anakin looked torn between shocked betrayal and sheer relief.
"Yes, but..."
"Yes. Thank you."
Padme shook her head, amused despite the grim content of the discussion. "But I won't have to," she said, "because you aren't that person. You aren't going to become that person."
"I could..."
"No, you couldn't," Padme told him. "That was another life, another man, and you aren't him. I'm not her. Obi-Wan isn't that Obi-Wan. We are never going to be those people, and what happened in that world is never going to happen to us. We get to make our own mistakes, Ani, and our own choices."
She looked down at his hands, then raised them and pressed a kiss to his knuckles. First the flesh, then the metal.
"I do love you, Ani. And if you don't want me, I'll understand. But I hope you do."
"Of course I want you," Anakin said, looking startled by the implication. "I'd have to be dead not to want you."
"If it's because of Obi-Wan,
I'd have to be dead and rotting not to want..." He stopped abruptly, blinking as color flushed his cheeks. It startled a laugh out of Padme, and she leaned forward to kiss him. Anakin slipped a hand free to wrap an arm around her waist, deepening the kiss, and Padme let him tip her back onto the bed. She had missed him, ancestors. She had missed him so much. She kissed him, hard, reaching to pull his shirt open as his hands went to the tie on her dressing gown. He nuzzled warm against her neck, making a faintly amused sound as he discovered one of the marks Obi-Wan had made, and Padme splayed her hands across his bare chest. She trailed them down, feeling him shiver beneath her fingers as she reached for the fastening of his trousers. And then Anakin said,
I can't, I'm sorry,
and sat up, dropping his head into his hands. Padme fought back her wave of frustrated lust and tugged her robe closed as she straightened up.
"Ani," she said, putting an arm around his shoulders.
He was tense against her.
"I mean, I can," he said quickly.
I need to think about everything. I'm sorry,
It's all right," Padme said, pressing a kiss to his cheek. She felt him sigh.
"I understand."
"Do you?"
he said doubtfully.
"I can try."
He twisted to kiss her, folding a hand in her hair.
It was rough and messy and a little desperate, bruising, and they were both breathing hard when Anakin finally pulled back.
"I love you," he said. "I do, more than, almost more than anything. I just need some time. Is that all right? Will you give me that?"
"Yes," Padme said. "Yes, of course, anything."
Anakin kissed her again, lighter this time.
"Were you serious?"
he asked.
"About what you said? About you and me and Obi-Wan?"
"Yes," Padme said again, feeling her nerves leap for an instant. "Yes, I meant it. We do that sometimes. The Naboo, I mean. It's not common, but it happens. Do you..."
"Yeah," Anakin said. "Yeah, I do. I've never thought about it before, but yeah, I really do. You might want to be the one to bring it up to Obi-Wan, though."
Padme relaxed, feeling herself smile.
"I can do that," she said.
Carefully, Anakin touched a finger to the mark on her collarbone and said,
"He bit you?"
"Yes," Padme said, with a warm shiver of remembrance. "And if you ask very nicely, he might bite you, too." Anakin looked a little scandalized, and Padme couldn't help laughing before she leaned forward and kissed him quickly.
"Annie, I love you," she said. "I'll wait as long as you need."
Operations Rain Shadow and Frostbite were the last and latest in a long line of military options to return Naboo to the welcoming bosom of the Galactic Republic. Most of Rain Shadow's predecessors were either abject failures, most notably Operation Lightbringer, or shelved before they could be carried out, but a few, such as Rainmaker and Groundquake, were successes that made Frostbite, and later Rain Shadow, ultimately possible. Frostbite's earliest ancestor was Operation Sand Dragon, originally conceived some 13 years before, in response to the Trade Federation occupation of Naboo. Sand Dragon was created by members of the Jedi Order, following receipt of Obi-Wan Kenobi's report on the extent of the occupation, and called for a task force of some 30 to 50 Jedi Knights. About two-thirds of these would be inserted into the planet's surface, while the others would be spread between the Trade Federation capital ships in the blockade and the occupied moons. Where possible, the Jedi would rendezvous with the Naboo Resistance, ideally linking up with Kenobi and Queen Amidala's forces in the capital of Theed. Over the course of several days to a week, the plan allowed for a loose timeline in order to account for discrepancies in the Jedi Order's scanty intelligence on the system. All Trade Federation installations would be captured or destroyed, the blockade would be broken, and the occupation ended. The final phase of Sand Dragon called for the return of Queen Amidala to power, and the escort of the captured Trade Federation officials to Coruscant for trial. Under closer inspection, Sand Dragon seems to be deeply flawed, first, and apparently most damning, in the number of Jedi deployed on planet. Frostbite, carried out more than a decade later, involved an invasion force of over 2 million individuals, several hundred Jedi Knights, and almost 300 warships. It must be remembered, however, that the Jedi of the late Republic were extremely capable, used to functioning not only as peacekeepers, but as warriors, diplomats, and insurgents as the situation demanded. Obi-Wan Kenobi of Naboo, in a report prepared for the Galactic Senate immediately following Amidala's declaration of planetary sovereignty, was described as one of the most dangerous men in the galaxy, equal to a company of professional soldiers, and ranked alongside bounty hunters such as Jango Fett, Cad Bane, and Dirge. His former comrades, all of whom were fully trained Jedi Knights with decades of experience, would have been no less formidable. Secondly, Sand Dragon incorrectly identified a number of key locations on Naboo. The Jedi assumed that Trade Federation centers of power would be primarily urban, and centered on the cities of Kadara, Dija Peak, Karan, Parley, Spinnaker, and Hart Sakor. Kenobi had only been able to provide first-hand intelligence on the areas within a week's speeder travel of Theed, and had been unwilling to do so, except verbally to Organa, for fear that the Alderaanian representative would be boarded and searched by the Trade Federation upon leaving the planet. As it happens, his fears were not without foundation. Organa reported to the Senate that the Federation had spent more than a day searching his corvette for stowaways and smuggled information. While all major urban areas on Naboo had been occupied and were under heavy guard, the Trade Federation was far less interested in the people of Naboo than it was in Naboo's rich natural resources, especially the veins of plasma that had originally drawn them to the planet. Wary of native resistance fighters, especially in the wake of Amidala's reoccupation of Theed and the capture of Nuke Gunray Runhako and the other members of the Occupation Council, the majority of the high-ranking Trade Federation officials on Naboo relocated to industrial sites or smaller rural areas outside of the main cities. If the Jedi had followed the plan outlined in Sandragon, they would have arrived in Naboo's major cities to find massive numbers of battle droids, but only low-ranking Federation officials. Perhaps the most glaring of Sandragon's flaws was that it failed to account for the native Gungan population. While the initial Trade Federation invasion had done the same thing, they had quickly learned their lesson when Amidala rallied the warriors of Otagunga to draw off the majority of the battle droids from Theed during her attack on the city. Although the population of Otagunga had been interned following the army's defeat in the Great Grass Plains, the majority of Gungans remained free and continued to torment the Trade Federation representatives on Naboo. Although in a few cases small groups coordinated with local resistance fighters, many other Gungans targeted the Naboo and the Trade Federation with equal prejudice. In certain areas of the planet, especially those where the Naboo and the Gungans had traditionally clashed, the Gungans proved a greater threat to the Naboo than Trade Federation battle droids. Sandragon makes no mention of this. In fact, the only reference to the Gungan population comes in a footnote in the initial planetary survey. Ultimately, the occupation of Naboo ended before Sandragon could be put into effect. The Holofile was put back on the shelf of the Jedi Archives and was largely forgotten for another 7 years, when Amidala's declaration of planetary sovereignty abruptly made a military invasion of Naboo a very likely possibility. Supreme Chancellor Dooku, who had been present during the initial development of Sandragon, pulled the old plan out of storage in order to develop Operation Prodigal, aimed at overthrowing Amidala and Kenobi and bringing Naboo back into the Republic. While Republic Defense Forces High Command and the Special Operations Bureau were putting together the new assault plan, they discovered a number of plans that had been developed during Palpatine's tenure as Supreme Chancellor. Groundquake, the code name for Republic support of various insurgent groups in the Naboo system, which was ongoing. Forest Fire, which proposed an invasion of Naboo in the wake of Amidala's expulsion of all Republic officials from Naboo. And Night Witch, a proposal to overthrow Amidala and install a new monarch in her place, created immediately before the Pentoran crisis forced Palpatine out of office. All three of these exhibit Palpatine's relative familiarity with his native planet, though Forest Fire and Night Witch display a stunning naivete and refusal to acknowledge the fundamental changes in the Naboo population that followed the occupation, and they were incorporated into Prodigal where relevant. Operation Prodigal was never carried out, largely thanks to widespread popular support in the galaxy for Queen Amidala, as hundreds of systems followed Naboo's example and seceded from the Republic. The Naboo Home Fleet and First Fleet, which stayed in the Naboo system for 4 months following the declaration of planetary sovereignty, made the system an impossible nut to crack. The relatively small Republic Space Navy was not considered capable of besting the combined forces of the Royal Naboo Fleet, not and have any significant number of warships left over. Although several versions of Prodigal were designed to combat this, the fact remained that any Republic warships would have to get close enough to the planet to launch and land assault carriers. All estimates suggested that only under extraordinary circumstances would the Republic Space Navy be able to land enough troops to make the expedition worthwhile. Estimated losses ranged from 60% to almost 90% of all troops, and the Galactic Senate reluctantly tabled Operation Prodigal for the time being. Over the next 3 years, the idea of an invasion of Naboo was brought up at infrequent but regular intervals both in the Jedi High Council and in the Galactic Senate. But it was not until war had been declared that Dooku brought Prodigal out of storage and began to develop Frostbite, the Republic's final attempt to bring Naboo back into the fold. Pandal, W. Rain Shadow. Dooku, Amidala, and the Republic Occupation of Naboo. Corellia, University of Corellia Press.
It has been many centuries since the Jedi served as generals of the Republic, Ki-Adi Mundi said, somehow managing to make the comment sound completely neutral instead of judgmental, which was the overtone Dooku was getting from him in the Force. Most of the other Jedi in the Operations Planning Center at the Temple seemed to agree, though no one said as much. Dooku could sense sorrow, resignation, frustration, and a few out-of-character counts of anger amongst them, but they all seemed to understand the necessity of the matter. The High Council had already made it clear months ago that no Jedi would be forced to serve as a general against their principles, though they were expected to continue acting as Jedi in other matters. We have been peacekeepers, peacemakers, advisors, and, even at times, warriors, Ki-Adi Mundi went on. But it has been a long time since we were soldiers. I had hoped that that day would never come again. With luck, it won't last long, Dooku said. He gestured at the hologram in front of them, which at the moment showed a star chart of the Naboo system. If we can capture the Queen of Naboo, then the Confederacy will collapse. They won't be able to sustain themselves without Queen Amidala.
So you think, Evenpyle said, sounding dubious. Amidala won't be taken easily. She's no fool, and she knows what's at stake.
And she knows Theed and its environs far better than we do, Adi Gallia pointed out. We know from Obi-Wan's old reports that there are secret passages in and out of the city. We'll have to strike hard and fast to keep her from escaping. If we lose the Queen, then we'll be in the same position the Trade Federation was 13 years ago.
And I think we all remember how that turned out, Pyle added grimly.
Amidala must be taken at all costs. If she survives, the Naboo and the Confederacy will rally around her.
According to our agent Phantom, Thulm said, stepping forward, Amidala will remain in the palace as long as possible.
He tapped a control on the holoprojector, pulling up a plan of the Theed Royal Palace that was, at least as far as they could ascertain, accurate. It probably wasn't, since they knew that the palace was riddled with secret passages, of which they knew only a few. But the public and private spaces were clearly marked.
During the Federation bombardment, she never evacuated. The palace shields are strong enough that as long as they're up, nothing short of orbital bombardment will even dent them.
He pointed at two rooms on the hologram, each marked in red.
She'll either be here in the throne room, or here in the war room.
Probably the latter. I recommend strike teams with at least 3 Jedi each proceed there immediately as soon as our agents and Theed disable the palace shields, while the Naboo are still focused on the naval battle. One of the Republic naval captains, present via hologram, said,
How do you plan to land troops on planet? The planetary defense grid will be active.
Leave that to us, Sacy Teen said.
The discussion went on for another 3 hours, until both the Jedi, the naval officers, and the representatives from the Special Operations Bureau finally agreed on most of the particulars of the invasion. As the holograms winked out, most of the Jedi taking their leave, Dooku joined Adi Gallia and Ki-Adi Mundi.
This is a very dangerous plan, Ki-Adi Mundi observed. Many lives could be lost for very little. If we fail to capture the Queen, everything depends on it.
Then we must not fail to capture the Queen, Adi Gallia said. Kenobi isn't with her. She'll be an easier target.
You're certain that he won't rejoin her on Naboo before the invasion begins? Dooku checked.
Adi's mouth tightened, but it was Ki-Adi Mundi who said,
We're certain. The Naboo First Fleet has made no attempt to return to the Naboo system.
They seem to be investigating the Holonet outage. They have task forces out placing temporary relays to maintain some kind of communication with the Confederate systems in the Core Worlds, Inner Rim, and Expansion region, as far as we've been able to determine. The public Holonet relays might be down for the moment, and Dooku didn't want that to last any longer than it had to. But fortunately, the Republic wasn't limited to the public ones, though that wasn't common knowledge. Communications were a little slower, with delays of several minutes between the Outer Rim and the Core, but it was more than the Confederacy or the public had right now. The banking clan and the other commerce guilds were having hysterics, though most of them had contingency relays in place. As far as Dooku was concerned, they could live with it for another week or so. The commerce guilds deserved a few hysterics after the mess they'd stirred up with the Naboo and what they'd cost the Republic Navy. "What I'm concerned with," Adigalia said after a moment, "is whether or not there will be confusion during the surface fighting, since both sides will have clone troopers. Friendly fire..." The Jedi had flatly refused to fight alongside battle droids, for which Dooku didn't blame them. If he had been one of the Jedi being sent to Naboo, he would have done the same thing. Beyond that, the Naboo were familiar with battle droids. They might hesitate for a crucial few seconds before firing on fellow clone troopers. "It's a risk we shall have to live with, I am afraid," Dooku said. "Unless the Jedi have several million foot soldiers they've been keeping from the Senate, there are no other options. The Republic security forces don't have the manpower or the training, and the clones do." Adi nodded reluctantly. "That's true. I still don't like it. The Kaminoans said that they wouldn't hesitate to fire on any enemy, even if that enemy was other clones, but no normal being..." "They're not normal beings," Ki-Adi Mundi pointed out. "They were created to fight and to follow orders. From what we have seen, there is no reason that they will not do so. Queen Amidala and the Naboo may treat them like people, but they are not people as we understand them. They will do as they are ordered." "Nor are they droids," Adi said. "This is a dangerous path we are walking." She crossed her arms over her chest, frowning deeply. "I don't like setting the precedent of buying our troops. It's too close to slavery for my comfort." "The people of the Republic are unaccustomed to volunteering their lives to defend this galaxy, I'm afraid," Dooku said. "Unless we plan on holding ourselves hostage to the Trade Federation's battle droids, there is no other choice." "I'm aware," Adi said. "That doesn't mean I have to like it. Any of it." "There is much about this that is unpleasant," Ki-Adi Mundi agreed. "That makes it no less necessary. More necessary, even, so that it does not last past its time." "If we can capture the Queen and Kenobi," Dooku said, "though the Navy will handle that." There was a moment of silence, something he couldn't quite read passing between the two Jedi, and then Adigalia said, "The Confederacy will not follow Kenobi without Amidala." "But the Naboo fleet will," Dooku pointed out. The Jedi considered that, then nodded. "Taking Kenobi alive would be preferable, but if that wasn't possible, Dooku would rather have him dead than alive and trying to free Amidala. In ideal circumstances, the Republic would be able to strike at both Naboo and the First Fleet simultaneously, but they didn't have the ships for that. It would take most of the Navy just to confront the home fleet with the overwhelming force necessary to land troops on planet. The Republic hadn't been responsible for a military operation of this size since the days of the Old Republic." "Has there been any progress in finding Yoda's attacker?" Dooku asked, changing the subject. "We've been looking, but she seems to have disappeared into thin air," Adi said, looking even more unhappy. "None of our contacts in the underworld have any idea who she is, where she came from, or even that she exists."
"And the connection to Kenobi?"
"We know he has contacts on Coruscant, but we don't know who they are. And..." She stopped, her hesitation humming in the Force. At least we can be certain that they aren't communicating with him at the moment. Fortunately, the reverse isn't true for our agents on Naboo. Dooku didn't miss the change in subject, or the fact that the two masters were steering him in the direction of the speeder bays, rather than the halls of healing, where he had been planning on checking in on Yoda. Since he couldn't technically afford the time to do so, and had to be back at the Senate building sooner rather than later for a committee meeting, he didn't protest. "Is there something that I ought to know?" he asked. Adi and Ki-Adi Mundi both glanced at him sharply. "What do you mean?" Ki-Adi Mundi said.
"I am aware that the Jedi Order is keeping secrets," Dooku said. "I hope that if they concern this mission, you will not keep them from me."
Adi Gallia said, "The Jedi Order's secrets are no longer any of your concern, Supreme Chancellor.